Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Narration by George podcast, the podcast on audiobooks, spiritual ideas, and other items of interest. We're on podcast number 14 today, and I've got a really special episode on tap. Sue Badeau, author, speaker, husband to Hector, and together the parents to 22 children. Yeah, you heard it right, 22, and they've also been foster parents to over 50 children. She was in Atlanta recently, and I took the opportunity to go down to Atlanta and spend some time with her. She graciously agreed to be interviewed for this podcast. Sue is the author of a number of books, as well as a speaker on topics related to children. She and her husband have won numerous awards for their work, including being recognized by President Clinton with an Adoption Excellence Award and receiving an Angels in Adoption Award from Congress. Both of these awards were for their work on behalf of adoption and children in foster care. She'll tell us some of her story today on this podcast, but you can find out more by visiting her website. It's SueBadeau.com, and that's SueBadeau.com. So let's let Sue tell some of her story.
So I'm sitting here with Sue Badeau. We're sitting outside of Atlanta in Peachtree City, Georgia. Sue Badeau's down here for a conference she's teaching at, and I decided to come down and meet her and talk with her. And she's got some interesting stories to tell. I wanted to share some of those stories with you. And I'm going to start out, just tell us just a little bit about you and your journey, Sue.
Okay, well, it's great to be with you, and we've had a nice time here in Peachtree City.
We have.
So I grew up in Barre, Vermont, a small town in Vermont, and dated my high school sweetheart, and we ended up, after college, getting married. But while we were still in high school, even, we talked about someday maybe wanting to adopt children and thinking about what that would mean, what that would look like. We thought, well, let's have two and adopt two. That seemed like a good game plan. We went on. We did get married. We did start that process. We had two children born to us. We did adopt two. But we went a little deeper into it after that. we met some kids in foster care. We had some emergency foster care placements in our family. We learned about what happens to adults who never really get attached to a family during their childhood. And we really wanted to make a difference. And so we started getting more involved with foster care and over the years adopting a few more of those kids.
Well, you told me you have adopted about 10 more than those two that you were 10 times more
10
than
times,
those,
right.
Those two that you started with.
That's
so you
right.
have 20 adopted children.
That's
plus
right.
your own two, plus countless numbers that you have influenced
yes,
through the years.
Exactly. We've fostered, we've informally cared for, we've mentored. We've had a variety of different roles with many kids.
That's a phenomenal imprint on our society. Thank you.
We certainly gained a lot from it.
Yeah,
too,
I know you have. I know you have. You are also an author. You're a speaker. Who do you generally talk to? Who are you contracted to talk with?
So I do probably three different types of audiences.
Mm-hmm.
One would be agencies that work with children in foster care or adoption, and so they'll hire me to come do trainings for their staff or to speak at events that they have. Sometimes it's mixed audience of social work staff and legal staff, like judges, lawyers that work in these systems, community people, teachers.
Mm-hmm.
So, it's, but those are that professional kind of people
mm-hmm.
associated with the field. Then I also do a lot directly with families. So
mm-hmm.
I'll get here, for example, in Peachtree City, I'm doing speaking at a conference that's intended for parents, foster parents, adoptive parents. They have this every year, and it's a great opportunity for the families to get time together, to get support from one another, and get some training and teaching in
mm-hmm.
areas that are
mm-hmm.
beneficial to them.
Mm-hmm.
And the third audience, sometimes I get invited to speak at different services or retreats or things with churches. So
those
would be the three different,
right.
and sort of in that descending order of the numbers of invitations
I get. All right. I understand. So are you speaking from an educational background? Are you educated in this other than obviously your life experience? Where is your formal training?
Right. So my degree, my college degree, was in child development.
Okay.
And I focused particularly on children in special education. Mm-hmm. So that was my major when I was in college.
Okay.
So that's my initial educational background. And then, although I didn't actually obtain over the years a master's, I went into master's level work in social services, child psychology, some of those areas as well. And for a period of time, I was, for a period of 10 years, I served on the National Child Traumatic Stress Network, which is an organization that has a lot of the researchers and clinicians that really do brain science.
Okay.
And my role with them, a lot, I learned tremendously. I mean, that's where I got a lot of my knowledge. But also my role was to then sort of, I call it, become a translator, to take a lot of that science and put it in terms that a layperson, a regular foster parent like myself or adoptive parent could understand.
Okay, okay.
And actually implement, do something
All right. So between the training you have and the life experience you have, you really can be, we can really call you Dr. Sue Doe, can't we?
I think I've earned it.
I think you have too.
Not to mention that I think I've earned however many high school diplomas. Helping all my kids get through high school.
As authors Sue and Hector have penned an autobiographical telling of their adventures in raising 22 children, it's appropriately entitled Are We There Yet? You can find it at Amazon and Barnes & Noble. Sue has also written devotional books and is an author for Helping Hands Press. For HHP, she has helped to write a series called Summer in Sweetland. She talks about this series and why she's excited about it.
So you also write.
Yes.
Okay. And I have recorded two books for you, but you've written far beyond that. The first book that I wanted to talk about is the Summer in Sweetland, Never Too Old.
Yes.
First. Okay. So tell us about the Sweetland series, because I know you've had influence in it from before that.
Well, actually, Summer in Sweetland was the first in the series. But, yes, a group of us were invited by Helping Hands Press to participate in this series that was going to be a number of short fictional pieces that all took place in the same small town. And so there were eight of us authors, and we got together to sort of create the town.
Mm-hmm.
So from a map of where the roads would be to the names of the local businesses or churches. But we each wrote our own story with our own cast of characters. We shared a few characters. We kept in contact with each other so that there would be a flow to it. So the whole series, that first one, Summer in Sweetland, eight stories, is very fun and interesting. Mm-hmm. They're all distinct stories, but they're interconnected. And mine, I had a real passion to write a story that would include the themes about older children in foster care who still need a family, often want a family, and often get overlooked when people are thinking, they think, oh, you're getting old enough, you're just going to be an adult, why do you still need a family?
Mm-hmm.
So that's my theme, you're never too old to need a family.
Okay.
You know?
Okay.
And yet it's fiction, so there's, you know, there's other things. There's a plot line, of course. There's activities that happen. There's characters that get developed. There's a whole family, the Evers family, that's an adoptive family. And then there's girls in a group home that are part of the town, part of the community of Sweetland. And there's, you know, a little crises in their lives and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a lot of fun to write and to be part of. And that particular book did, when it was released, became, you know, Amazon, one of their bestsellers in that category right away. So that was also exciting. And then Helping Hands liked the outcome of that whole Sweetland series so much they produced a sequel at Christmas time called Tis the Season in Sweetland, and then a third sequel at just this recent Easter time called Sunrise in Sweetland.
Mm-hmm.
And so the same group of authors with a couple of variations, again, did those stories at Christmas time and at Easter. And so we followed the same characters, went deeper into their lives and developing them, added, of course, some new ones here and there. They had some new adventures and crises and things like that. My story in the Christmas season one of the children in the family was a teenage boy that had been in the juvenile justice system and then had recently, right before Christmas, gotten out. And so that story kind of focuses on him and one of his buddies and their experience reintegrating back into the community.
Okay.
But what happened that was especially fun, and that, you know, I think because you've also recorded a book for another author that's part of the Sweetland series, Peg Lynn Pfeiffer, she got interested in the characters that I initially developed in my Summer in Sweetland series from the group home.
Right.
And she liked them so much that she wanted to include them in her next story and help them to get adopted.
Right,
So she did, and as part of that, we communicated regularly, and we had never met, but we've become really close friends, and you know, she would ask me the questions about how long would an adoption take, or the, so her stories are very authentic about the process because she really did do her homework on that. And not only then did she carry those characters into the next Sweetland sequel, but she's now got her own series that she's launching, and just the first one recently came out, and totally taking following the lives of these young girls now as they become young adults and as they move into their adult years. And so for me, it's just very exciting. I feel like, I said, I sort of feel like the grandmother of these children, watching them flourish and grow, and it's been very exciting to see it have life, and especially because I really think people need to know more about kids that are in foster care and kids that need families and need mentors and need support in the community, and not everyone comes to a conference like the one I'm at. If you're not already in it. But you might read fiction.
Right.
You might pick up a collection of fiction, and then you might read it and say, oh, this might be something I'd like to learn more about. And that's what excites me about these fictional stories, mine and the other Sweetlanders and Peg.
Well, it's one of the things I've been talking about over the last couple of weeks when I've talked about historical fiction. We may not necessarily read history, but when we read these books based in history and steeped in history, then we learn about our history as a result.
Absolutely. And what I love about historical fiction is it helps you understand the daily lives of people.
Right.
You know, you may have learned something about history, hopefully, in school. Mm-hmm. We all learned something. But but it's often timelines, dates, wars, presidents.
Right.
You know,
and this is about people.
People and their lives.
Yeah.
And that's what's so rich.
Exactly.
And, yeah.
Exactly.
I asked Sue what was her favorite passage from the Sweetland series book that she authored, Never Too Old, and she told me this.
Out of Never Too Old, I love how it culminates towards the end, of course, but I think my favorite part of it is there's a court hearing that's happening, and one of the main characters, the mother, is a social worker, so she has to go to court on one of her cases. But while she's there, she runs into one of the girls from the group home who's having a hearing about her own life, and they slip notes back and forth to each other.
It had been 45 minutes since the lunch break, and Celia was still waiting for her four cases to be called. Court days were so frustrating. Hurry up and wait, as they say. The door to the waiting room opened, and Wendy stepped in with a young woman who must have been her caseworker. She shyly waved to Celia and took a seat, pulling a book from her backpack. Celia scooted closer to Wendy and asked how school was going. It's okay. I'm having a little trouble with a few classes, but it'll work out. I see you're reading the Epic of Sanjara. That's a powerful story. Wendy's eyes lit up. Really? You know it? I love ancient stories. I guess that makes me odd, but I see so many parallels with my own life. It's fascinating that a story told so long ago could help me understand my life better than most of the people who know me. I mean, the way Sanjara had to move around so much after being exiled, it's a lot like life in foster care. I'm thinking of majoring in African studies if I get to go to college, but people tell me I wouldn't be able to use that degree for any real-world jobs. Wendy sighed as the door opened, and the court clerk ushered another caseworker with three children into the courtroom. Wendy wrote a note and passed it to Celia. Is it true that teenagers like me can be adopted? My caseworker says I'm too old. She wants me to sign up for a supervised independence program and get an apartment, but I'm not so sure I'm ready for that. Hastily, Celia scribbled on the back of the note and passed it back to Wendy. Never too old. Tell the judge you want a family. He'll listen. After Celia's cases were completed, Wendy's case was called. Celia gave the girl a smile she hoped was encouraging and whispered a quick prayer that the judge would listen to this sweet girl's heart and desire for a family. Please, Lord, I know you want Wendy to have a family of her own, a family for a lifetime. Open the doors for her today. Let her see that, unlike Sanjara, she has not been exiled. you have a place and a family for her. From her own series, Roots and Wings at Loonstone Lake, I've recorded the opening book, Call of the Loons. I asked her about that book as well.
So tell us about the other book, or Roots and Wings.
So Roots and Wings, I got interested in developing a story that, again, would have some of these themes about children who, you know, are in difficult situations, whether it's foster care, adoption, juvenile justice. But I wanted to set it in an area that I was familiar with growing up in New England. I was an avid camper growing up, and my husband and I have taken our kids camping a lot and always dreamed of owning a campground someday. So we haven't actually owned one.
So this is kind of a personal dream.
Making the dream come true by writing about a family that owns a campground.
Your virtual dream.
That's right.
There you go.
So I wanted to set it there. I wanted to incorporate the values and the history of that part of the country. And I wanted to put a little mystery in it, because when it comes to reading, I love to read mysteries. And so I wanted to try my hand at that, and so I'm still working on it. It's about half, the whole series is about half done now, and I think the other half will be finished in the next couple of months.
That's cool.
Yeah, so that's been fun.
That's very neat. So out of Roots and Wings, pick a passage that is a favorite of yours.
I think that really it's when... There's a time at near the end of the first book when the family decides, they've discovered that this campground that was in their family history is now, they're going to have the opportunity to run it, but it's been closed for many years.
Right.
And they go up to decide that they are going to open it, and they get a whole bunch of volunteers from the youth group and from their friends and to do the whole cleanup on the area. And there's a couple of particular conversations that happen between the family members and some of the youth that are involved with the cleanup that were some of my favorite parts of that book.
Okay.
Where, you know, the youth who hadn't had this chance to feel important. One kid in particular says, well, I'm, you know, people were signing up for tests. They were going to do, I'm not good at anything.
Out.
Yeah, I'm just, you know, I'm a kid. There's nothing I can do.
Yeah.
And then he really gets nurtured along. Mm-hmm. And so that's my favorite part, because it really... it shows the power, really, of community and of relationships and what difference that can make in the life of a child, but also in achieving a dream. So,
okay. All right.
Luann watched, her mouth agape, as people, coolers, cleaning supplies, and cans of paint spilled out of all vehicles, and the parking area began buzzing with reunions and introductions. She and Frank walked around greeting each person, thanking them for coming to the special Loon's Nest cleanup weekend and welcoming the newcomers as they arrived. By the time Luke, Sid, and Liam pulled in a few minutes later, six different groups of volunteers were ready to get to work. Emily pulled out her camp whistle and called the crowd to order. With all of her experience during college and in her current job organizing volunteer crews for service projects, she was the perfect person to whip this group into shape. "We have four primary projects," she began. "Yard work, painting, interior cleaning, and minor repairs. Big repairs, plumbing, and such were completed last week, so all the big systems are in tip-top shape, and you'll see we have a brand-new up-to-code kitchen in the dining hall across the road. After the interior cleaning is finished, we'll have a fifth project, bed-making and pillow-fluffing." That drew a laugh. "Each project has a crew leader," she continued. "I'll introduce you to the leaders, and then, depending upon which project you are most interested in, you gather with the crew leader, and that's where you'll get further instructions and necessary supplies. Rick Ellison from Danville is in charge of the yard crew. If you want to do yard work, meet him in front of the shed over there." "Don't let Robbie get in that line," Luke called out, ribbing his younger brother. "He's dangerous around lawnmowers. Remember the time he cut his toe off?" This drew gasps and another round of laughter before Emily could continue. "Dean Withers and DeMond Abernathy from Sigma Pi Phi are co-leading the painting crew. There will be both inside and outside painting jobs. Meet them by the white tent over there if you want to paint," Emily said, and continued until all leaders had been introduced and everyone had dispersed to their chosen crew. Looking up from her checklist, she noticed an overweight teenager leaning against a tree alone. "I'm Emily. What's your name?" she asked, walking up to him.
"Kevin," he mumbled.
"Can't find a crew that interests you?"
"I came with my youth group because the pastor said I should come. But I ain't no good at any of this stuff. I'm in foster care, so I ain't allowed to use the lawnmowers, and if I paint, I'd just make a mess."
"Forget about the mess part. Is painting something you'd like to do?" Emily asked, and watched the boy's eyes light up just a bit as he slowly nodded.
"Super. I know there's a paint job you can do. We need the whole back side of the dining hall painted. I need someone big and strong like you to work on that. Would you be willing to give it a try? I'll make sure you have a couple of helpers. You won't be alone."
"Really? You gonna trust me with a paintbrush?"
"I sure will. Ready to start? Let's walk over so you can meet Dean and DeMont, and they'll get you set up."
After Emily made sure Dean welcomed Kevin, she strolled over to where her mother and Luke were setting up a refreshment tent and getting the charcoal grill started.
"Mom, I have to tell you about this boy Kevin I just met. He's exactly the kind of kid Dad wants to bring here to Loon's Nest. The campground isn't even open yet, and Dad's dream is already starting to come true. It gave me goosebumps."
"Our God is a God of goosebumps and muscle grease," Luann said, looking around.
"Just look at all these people who showed up to help. I can hardly take it in. I do hope I planned enough food."
That's author Sue Badeau. We talked about a lot of books in this interview. You heard about the Sweetland series, Summer in Sweetland, available in book as well as ebook. The segment entitled Never Too Old is also an audiobook. Both are from Helping Hands Press. Roots and Wings at Loonstone Lake is available at Amazon and Barnes & Noble. The audiobook Call of the Loons can be found at Helping Hands Press. Christmas is Past, the Christmas Primer, is available at Amazon. Check the podcast description on my website, narrationbygeorge.com. Click on Podcasts, and you'll find links to all the books. Go to narrationbygeorge.com, click on the podcast link on the menu at the top of the page. Well, that's all our time for today for the Narration by George podcast, the podcast of audiobooks, spiritual ideas, and other items of interest. Hope you've enjoyed our visit with Sue Badeau. I certainly did. Thank you, Sue, for spending Saturday afternoon with my wife and me. We certainly enjoyed being with you. Next week's podcast is a look forward to the Here Now Festival in Kansas City, Missouri. I'm going to be appearing there the night of June 11th at 5:30 p.m. That's Central Time at Prospero's Books to do a live reading from Huckleberry Finn. We'll talk more about that next week. See you then next week when the Narration by George podcast will be new on Wednesday.